T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And it's his name is Marcus Hayes. Good morning, Marcus.
Guys, I got to tell you, I'm a little worried about myself.
Why is that?
Like 90% of the time, I agree with Joe Giglio.
Oh no!
But you know how he's like Elliot Shore Parks. He's like a look at me tweet guy, which is fine. I understand it's the world we live in. But he tweets some pretty outrageous stuff, and I'm like, you know what? It's a pretty good point.
Al, I don't like the way this conversation's going already. No. We're only 10 seconds in. This is going to get interesting.
Well, let's be honest with your listeners and your coworkers. You are the walk down. I sit on the right field side of the press box, and so does Jan Janssen here.
That's correct.
And he'll go get himself a water or a Coke, and he'll walk by me during the last 2 years with Gabe Kapler managing. And like three steps away, he starts the head shake and the frown. You know what I'm saying?
No, I was saying earlier, Marcus, how I always enjoy the times that we kind of get together and have, you know, when we eat dinner before a game and just shoot the breeze about random things, because you stick to your guns when you have an opinion. You can't be molded or swayed to someone else's. So this week, once and for all week, let's go back to Monday. Donovan McNabb, and, you know, the once and for all question was he underrated or overrated? Marcus, you covered him. You covered
overrated.
Him. Where does he – tell
oh
me, Marcus.
Oh, my God. Well, here's the thing. Like, I covered Donovan's first few years in Philadelphia, and then I covered baseball during his sort of heyday. And the consistent comment I would get from sports writers in other towns, because with baseball you travel more than anything else, is what is wrong with Philadelphia? Why don't they love Donovan McNabb? Mm-hmm. And to this day, Donovan McNabb remains appreciated more outside of Philadelphia than inside of Philadelphia. I got my dates wrong. I thought Donovan preceded Steve McNair. Actually, Steve McNair preceded Donovan, but they sort of rose to prominence in lockstep because Steve didn't start his first couple of seasons or didn't start every game. That said, Donovan McNabb had a better career than Steve McNair by pretty much every metric. Mm-hmm. But in this town, if you ask people who was better, Donovan or McNair, you might get a lot of people saying McNair.
Do you think Donovan's personality plays a big factor in this?
Not a big factor. I think you could kind of be a total. And Donovan's a goofball. And he's a dork, you know. And these are things that I've said to Donovan's face, so it's not like I'm bashing him. He's kind of a nerd. He's kind of an Urkel. But that said, if Donovan hadn't thrown balls into the ground or had won a Super Bowl, he would have been revered. It's just that simple. Donovan McNabb is so much better than Nick Foles ever could be. It's laughable. But Nick Foles gets on hot streaks, and Nick Foles plays without fear. So, you know, the Donovan McNabb was clearly, by far, you know, if Iverson wasn't, depending on how you sort of grade the Iverson years and how much, whether you need to be all 10 years to be the decade guy, Donovan was clearly the most significant athlete of Philadelphia's 2000s.
All right, so let's go from Monday to Tuesday's topic, Marcus. The best player on the World Series Phillies team of 2008, the consensus, it seems overall, the winner of said conversation was Chase Utley. Do you agree?
Well, that's a huge shocker. Talking to the official station of Chase Utley. Yeah. I will say that's probably the best year Chase had, not statistically, but effectively the best year he had. I think his OPS was better the year before. But the most significant player on any of those really, really good teams is Ryan Howard. And if you look at Ryan Howard's numbers, I know he batted 250 or whatever in 2008. I think he had 14 more home runs and 42 more RBIs than Chase Utley. Mm-hmm. Chase Utley would have been a spectacular second baseman hitter anywhere. He was made for Ryan Howard. I mean, that was a wonderful tandem. And I will tell you that Chase Utley benefited more from Ryan Howard than Ryan Howard benefited from Chase Utley. At that point, from 2006 to about 2012, every National League East team constructed their entire bullpen to deal with Ryan Howard. Not Chase Utley. He was also a left-handed hitter. But Ryan Howard, because Ryan Howard could beat you with a bad swing. Chase Utley didn't. He had very few bad swings. But finally, the best Philly and the second most significant player athlete in Philadelphia in the 2000s was Jimmy. He was the best player of that era, that entire era. He was more consistent. He played more. But if you're just talking 2008, it was Ryan Howard, and not far behind Chase Utley. There's an argument that it was Brad Lidge more than Chase Utley.
Right.
Not an argument I would make, because I don't really regard pitchers and especially relievers as important as everyday players. But there is an argument to be made that if you're ever going to talk about a reliever being significant, you talk about the one who was perfect.
Well, I mean, just as a follow-up, before I jump to the next category, because it's something that a conversation I have all the time that I know colleagues have all the time, and maybe you've talked about it as well. When it comes to that core of that 2008 Philly squad or that tenure of Philly's baseball, there's always, will any of them end up in the Hall of Fame? And, outside of Jimmy, who has a slim chance, there's odds are that nobody else will. Having said that, the Phillies Hall of Fame, where they retire your number, the requisite was always that you had to be in the Hall of Fame in order to have your number retired by the organization. Marcus, do you think there will come a time where maybe they'll make an exception for some of that particular core where they do it?
If they ever want another person in the Hall of Fame, the Phillies Hall of Fame, they better change the requirement.
Yeah.
Who's going into their Hall of Fame?
No, I know. There's nobody anytime soon, I know.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a 40-year gap or whatever. I mean, it's a ridiculous requirement. And it's an arrogant one, because you assume that your franchise will consistently. And that's the Jimmy argument isn't that Jimmy was a better hitter than Chase or Ryan. Or, even more important, or should have been paid better than Cole Hamels, who everybody kind of forgets was the core, the foundation of the other part of the equation. The reality is Jimmy played more games because he went to the post more often. He didn't get hurt, and he was available. Mm-hmm. And he was a superior defensive shortstop. I mean, that can't be overstated, especially in the National League. But, yeah, but Jimmy Rollins should definitely be in the Phillies Hall of Fame. I would put all four of them in the Phillies Hall of Fame. I mean, it was the greatest era, and to have no one from your greatest era in your Hall of Fame is kind of paradoxic, right?
Right. I couldn't agree more. Now, Marcus Hayes, nice enough to join us this morning. Let's move to Wednesday and what was probably the most hostile of this 5-day period, Sam Hinkie. I mean, you covered him. I covered him. Was Sam Hinkie a good general manager?
I was part of that debate with Ike and Johnny Marks, I guess. And my answer from the day Sam Hinkie sort of resigned to now, this is the answer. He did some things well, but he was given a lot of latitude to do things well, namely buying draft picks. And he did some things very poorly, namely running the organization, himself being accountable and making other people accountable. It's funny. We talk about, culture and what's hilarious to me is the people who bash Gabe Kapler for having a bad culture also laud Sam Hinkie despite the fact that he ignored his culture.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a general manager in any business, and I said this on Wednesday, I think it was too, when you are a general manager of a restaurant, when you're a general manager of a ball club, when you're a general manager of an office, you have to be able to manage people. And Sam Hinkie was abysmal at that. Now, Sam Hinkie is really, really smart, very, very adaptable, very sort of self-reflective. I think Sam Hinkie should have gotten another job inside of a year or two. The most damning legacy of Sam Hinkie is nobody wanted to hire him.
Right. Do you think that's what it was, Mark? No, I was going to say, do you think that's what it was? Because, you know, the follow-up question is always, well, why did he never get another job within the NBA?
I just don't think that people trusted him. I mean, he left with a 13-page manifesto telling everyone in the NBA, including Jerry Colangelo, the director of USA Basketball, that he was smarter than them and they would regret it. It was like a supervillain, you know, going off to, you know, exile on an island somewhere. It was crazy, you know. It was absolutely crazy, and it was suicidal. And again, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a guy like that doesn't deserve another chance. I thought he did. I thought he would. I thought he could be an excellent resource, even if he wasn't the boss. Mm-hmm. And I thought by the other thing we forget is Sam Hinkie never really had authority doing anything until he was in that position, and he didn't handle that very well. That doesn't mean he wouldn't handle it well given another chance as an assistant somewhere and then ascending to general managership, you know, in his mid-40s or early 50s, when that's kind of when people become CEOs and you know, presidents of organizations inside and outside of sports, because you kind of have to live a little, and he hadn't, and that was unfortunate. And I will say, I mean, I think he was smart. I think that, you know, he made some mistakes evaluating talent and constructing teams. But again, who doesn't?
Right.
You know, nobody's perfect in construction of a team, especially in the era in which we live.
Marcus, you kind of previewed.
So to answer your question, he was a bad general manager when he was here,
right.
But that doesn't mean I think he'd be a bad general manager today.
Okay. So pretty much answered this within a previous question. So yesterday was Wentz versus Foles. And clearly, I understand you would choose Wentz. When you were listening to this station and you hear people, individuals taking the Foles side of things, what was going through your mind?
It's insane. I mean, it's almost as though they're baiting you. They're trolling you. The amount of evidence against Nick Foles being a starting quarterback pretty much anywhere is almost insurmountable. The amount of evidence in his favor to be a spectacular backup and a well-paid backup, maybe the best backup in history, certainly the best backup in the league right now, is also insurmountable. That's kind of who he is. He's so streaky, but he's so cerebral, and he's a guy that you can prepare to beat, but a guy that you cannot prepare to sort of contain when he's on. You know what I mean?
Right.
He reminds me of, like, you know, Vinny the Microwave Johnson. You don't want Vinny the Microwave Johnson, you know, to be the guy you run your offense through back in his Detroit days, but you need him off the bench. So, you know, Nick Foles will always be remembered and revered in Philadelphia. The best thing Nick Foles can do is stay away from Philadelphia, because, you know, Nick Foles was not good in about half of the games he started in Philadelphia in his last run here. It's better to sort of let that sleeping dog lie. I mean, thank goodness that Alshon Jeffrey dropped that pass, because Nick Foles didn't have to make any more. I like Nick. I hope he succeeds, and I think he's genuine, and I root for him. If they had continued to play that game, that would give him a chance to lose it and give him a chance to lose going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of who Nick is. He's going to win you games, and he's going to lose you games. He's not going to manage games. That's just kind of the guy he is. He thinks he's a gunslinger, but, you know, he's more like Festus than Matt Dillon.
Right. So this all leads to the final day, which is today, all about Gabe Kapler. I will go with the – I'm not going to ask you whether Gabe Kapler was a good manager, but I will ask you this. Did Gabe Kapler get a fair shake in Philadelphia?
See, now that's my thing with Joe. I agree that the best overall grade you can give, the fairest overall grade you can give Gabe Kapler is incomplete, because he was not given reinforcements last year, and I don't think he should have been. I don't think the team could win. I don't disagree with what Andy McPhail said or what Matt Klentak didn't do. And the first year he overachieved. You know, they collapsed down the stretch, but that's what mediocre teams do. That's why they're mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the definition. It's hard. Baseball, one of the reasons I'm not huge on the 100 to 80 to 100 game series is that baseball, more than any other sport, is a war of attrition. And there was a lot of attrition in the last two Augusts and Septembers, but he kind of knew it was coming. He's been around. He hasn't been a manager long, but he's been a baseball guy for, what, 28 years, 29 years, counting high school and college?
Mm.
Gabe knew it was coming.
Well, do you?
And, you know, he wasn't given the kind of chance that you should be given. But most first-time managers are not, and he made lots of mistakes. But, you know, the messaging that he gave every day that you and I sat through, that was true. That he believes in his message. He believes in who he is.
Right.
So whether you like that or not, he's at least authentic. Philly doesn't like that sort of quote-unquote authenticity. But Gabe believes in all those, you know, aphorisms and axioms and sayings and, you know, words to live by.
Well, and it's all stuff we'll miss, you know, covering him because he was always a lightning rod. But, you know, Gabe Kapler, the manager moving forward, when you're now viewing him from across the country and your time covering him here, do you think he's going to become a better manager, or do we see what Gabe Kapler is and will always be?
I'll say this. I thought the way that I see Gabe Kapler is very similar to the way I see Sam Hinkie, in that I believe that given a chance, because they're so smart, because they're so self-reflective, they will improve. I don't know if he'll be, you know, Bruce Bochy, but I think he'll be even Charlie Manuel, who mm-hmm. did it very differently. But I think he will be a better manager. I don't know if he'll be good. I don't know if he'll be great. But I think he'll be better because, you know, he's the kind of guy like Sam Hinkie who learns from sort of like – they don't even call them mistakes. They call them strategic errors. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, but yes, they are. I think that he has a chance to do better. One guy I did not think would do well and didn't was Chip Kelly, who is very much like those two guys. You know, my way or the highway. I'm smarter than you. This is really new. You can't understand it. I never thought Chip Kelly would succeed at any level again because his system and his pride are both incredibly flawed.
Mm-hmm. Name is Marcus Hayes, a brilliant columnist for the Inquirer, Inquirer.com. For links to all his stories, follow him on Twitter if you don't already, @InkStainWretch. Marcus, I appreciate it, man.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, Marcus Hayes, nice enough to join us. Now, Al, I got to be honest with you. Although, you know, Marcus lays it out straight in how he feels, he agreed with Giglio a little bit there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.